I'm Andrew Finney, and welcome to Series 4 of the Nurse Researcher Podcast, a podcast aimed at being able to sort of dig deep into the lives of nurse researchers at all levels. This new series will be the PhD student series, and we're really looking forward to be able to hear back from and listen to people that have just completed a PhD or are currently undertaking a PhD. So listen in and enjoy. Hello and welcome to the Nurse Researcher Podcast, and we're here, episode 3 of our new series around the PhD student, and as always, I'm delighted with my guest, so I'm going to say welcome to Faye Ashton.
Hi there, Andrew. Thank you for having me.
Delighted to have you. I give up trying to describe people now and give their titles in my intro, so you tell us who you are and where you're based.
So I am a doctoral research fellow based at Loughborough University, and I'm seconded from my role as a vascular research nurse at the Leicester Biomedical Research Centre, which is part of the NIHR.
Perfect. And you're a nurse by background, obviously,
yes,
for this
correct.
Series, which gives you, and I say that because I think in this series, probably I'm looking at doing an episode with a physio. And I'm potentially looking to do an episode with a medic just to try and see if the journeys are the same and the stories are the same, because we often go, it's easier for them or it's harder for them. And so I am just confirming that you know, we have the nursing background with people for this series. So you know where this takes you. You tell me that you listen to the episode. So I have to start with, tell me why and how you became a nurse.
Of course. So I normally have a bit of a stock answer for this, you know, when you always get asked why you're a nurse, have you always wanted to become a nurse? And no, I've not always wanted to become a nurse. I didn't grow up wanting to be a nurse, but it was something that we say that we kind of fall into. But I think when I sit and think about why I have become a nurse and reflected on it, growing up, had a lot of interest in science, human biology, that sort of thing. When I was growing up, my mum was a medical secretary, and she always used to bring home these little medical dictionaries, because she used to have to type up all the notes from the postmortems and things like that. And I just found it really interesting. There was all these big words and I didn't know what they meant, and how could this be relevant to what's going on in my body and things like that. So I think that's where the sort of science interest came from. But also, I think I was surrounded by a lot of people who had those sort of typical traits of nurses. So very caring people, very empathetic, very hardworking. So I think that's probably why I ended up going down that route a little bit. So it's obviously something I'm very happy that I've ended up doing, but I think the common misconception is that everyone is born to be a nurse and that's what they wanted to be as a child and they go into it. I knew I wanted to work somewhere to do with people, somewhere in healthcare, and I sort of thought, oh, I don't want to go into, I don't know, like radiography or paramedics or something like that. But I ended up going into nursing, and I love it, adult nursing specifically as well.
And you did the degree, no doubt.
So I did the advanced diploma in nursing studies. I did that at Sheffield Hallam. So when I was applying, I was sort of umming and ahhing between adult and child. Just went for adult, basically. So I did the adult diploma in nursing studies. And then from there, I did the sort of top-up dissertation towards the end. That was that. And then from doing my training in Sheffield, I moved to Leicester, and that's where I've had all of my qualified nursing career, shall we say.
And it's, it's easy to jump ahead if I'm doing a series with a professor or a clinical academic or a senior research lead, because you feel like you can say to them, you know, did you know you're academic? Because they're academic. When somebody's a PhD fellow or PhD student, you wonder if they consider themselves academic. I consider you academic. But if I said to you, did you always feel like you were naturally academic? Would that sound right to you, or would you say it was a harder route?
It is not a word that I would use to describe myself, but people would have described it probably as academic. So maybe at school I would have been described as being more academic,
Clever.
Which, I suppose makes sense. Yeah, I suppose no, I wouldn't have said I would identify as being academic, and even now it feels a bit strange to say that I am an academic nurse, although by definition, doing a PhD, you can't get much more academic than that, can
You
you,
can't get away from it.
really?
No. And that shows how we tend to feel, doesn't it? Even in that level, even that level of academia, we're still thinking, am I an academic? So, like all of us, I think we forget that people aren't parachuted in to sort of band-aid roles. Everybody starts at the same level. You're proud to have the uniform on, you have your new job, you have a clinical career, and you want to know everything about your patient group. When do you start thinking about academia? Did you then go on to do a master's pretty quickly, or have you had a massive jump to PhD? How have you transitioned from being very clinical to bringing academia back into your role?
Yeah, so my sort of clinical background is cardiovascular critical care. So spent most of my clinical time in an ITU setting, and we had very research active consultant anaesthetists and intensivists, which I thought, that's quite interesting. What are they doing? Why can't I do that? I think I'm just a bit nosy, really. So kind of looked into that a little bit, and then whilst I was still working in ITU, I saw a job come up in the NIHR's Leicester Biomedical Research Centre, and I kind of thought, well, that's a bit different. It's completely different to all the sort of cardiac surgery background and critical care that I've worked in for the last sort of 10 years or so. Let's give that a go. So I applied for it. And actually, initially, I didn't get it. So it was specifically for cardiology. I was sort of second on the list, which you think, oh, they always say that, don't they? Forgot about it. And then about 3 months later, I had a phone call from the senior research nurse who said, hi, I don't know if you're still interested, but we've got a more funding available to work within vascular research. Are you still interested? And naturally, I snapped a hand off and said, yes, when can I start? So my sort of route was from purely clinical into a clinical research nurse delivery role, which I think you as yourself worked as a research nurse previously, haven't you? So yes, that's where I kind of discovered clinical research, and yeah, I absolutely love it. I feel like
And
it's
do
a
you
bit of a
think
hidden gem.
it is? And do you think, because we used to think, and I've said this, I've probably repeated myself from previous episodes of the podcast, but it's a long time, it's 20 odd years ago that I was a research nurse, and I felt very capped, very, in a ceiling. If anything, they were reducing the bands at the time of people that were in research delivery, and it felt like not a trapped role, but a role with limitations. And now it feels like something that can set you up to be whatever you want to be. And I've always felt over the last 5 or 6 years now, when I speak to people that are nurses in research delivery, that they're really getting a research training that is practical, that aligns so well to research training that is academic. Would you agree?
Yes, completely. So when I went for the research nurse role, I didn't do that with the aim of, okay, if I do this, that means I'm going to be able to do a PhD and go into academia. Even at that point, I didn't really consider myself going into academia. To me, it was sort of a speciality clinically that I was familiar with, but the research was like an added extra. So yeah, I feel like it's different. It's completely different. Quite misunderstood what a research nurse does and how they deliver and how they sort of collaborate between the clinical area and research. And is it do you get capped? I don't know necessarily. I feel like it opened a lot of avenues for me, because I don't think I would be undergoing my PhD now if I was still in a completely clinical area. And I totally agree that as a research nurse, it is a little bit like an introduction to research almost, sort of the governance and the delivery and all the sort of challenges that come with that. So yeah, I think it probably is a bit like a training opportunity without it being identified as that.
It's a lived, it's learning on the job, isn't it? It's work-based learning. So you're learning a side of research that people that might go straight into a PhD wouldn't realize happens. And you know that bit. And very often it's the difficult bit, isn't it? The recruitment, the ethics, those sorts of things.
Yeah, definitely. And I don't think that's something that I fully appreciated until I sort of came out of my research nurse role, had started my PhD, and sort of going through doing all the ethics. And I was thinking, oh, this is all right, actually. And then getting really excited about collecting all of the data. And I felt like I was just in my prime with it. I thought, oh, yes, the more the merrier. I love collecting all this data. This is my strength. And then sort of looking at colleagues who were also doing their PhD at Loughborough, who maybe didn't come from a nursing or even a clinical background, where actually they found the data collection quite challenging. So yeah, it made me realise that I'm in quite a privileged position from that perspective. So that was, yeah,
So
definitely a strength.
practically and clinically, we can see there a trajectory. So we can see, staff nurse probably stepping up the bands, moving across into a role of research delivery. But what about the academic side that runs alongside that? You've talked about an advanced diploma. Was there a top-up degree? Was there a master's anywhere along the line at that stage?
Yeah, sorry. So yeah, so I did
So
the
bear in mind, I am
advanced
pushing you in
diploma.
that direction. I come back to it.
The advanced diploma nursing studies, then I did the top-up degree. I've not done a master's, traditional master's. So whilst in intensive care, for those listeners who maybe aren't from a critical care background, there's a national critical care framework, and you can basically do different university modules. I think they were at level six. So like an acutely ill adult, critically ill patient. So I did both of those modules, which allowed you to look after patients that had increased requirements. And then when I was in my research nurse role, I started to think, although I'm delivering all of this research and it's not my research, I don't really understand necessarily why I'm doing it, or what does this mean? What does that mean? And although I used to sort of pester the principal investigators and the professors to explain things to me, I thought it's my responsibility to go and learn a bit more. So I went and did a standalone research methodologies module whilst doing my research nurse role. So that's kind of the only academic sort of academia that I've done before going into my PhD. So from that perspective, it's been quite a steep jump going into a PhD.
I mean, because I don't know the people you're talking about, you're talking about them very positively. You can have managers in a role that if you're doing very well in research delivery, they want you to stay exactly where you are. And you can have leaders who actually see that you've got potential to do even more and will support you to move on. It sounds like you work with leaders rather than managers. And so how did you get to that stage where, you've done all of this stuff practically, you clearly show yourself to be very good at your job, and rather than keep you going, supporting other people's studies and keeping them ticking over, somebody's gone, let's manage you now, let's support you, let's put you through forward for a fellowship. How does that come about?
So, probably a little bit different to some of your previous people that you've had speaking on your podcast. So, I'm doing my PhD. It's Wellcome Trust funded, and it's through a doctoral training program. It's with the Leicestershire Healthcare Inequalities Improvement Program, which is quite a mouthful, so we shorten it to LHIP. And basically, LHIP is for, or it's advertised to healthcare professionals from underrepresented professions within academia. So we've got four cohorts now. We have nurses, physiotherapists, we have a midwife, we have dieticians, radiographers, lots of different backgrounds. And about this time every year, they put out projects for PhDs. And you basically would apply to those projects, and that's what I did. But I actually found out about the LHIP program when other people sent me the email. So it got circulated within the trust and within the university that we're attached to. And three people sent it to me and said, "Oh, Faye, this looks like something you should do." And I saw the first one and thought, "Oh, no, the probably sent that to me by accident. Why would they send that to me?" And then another person said, "No, Fred, this has got your name on it. You should go and just apply for it and see how it goes." So that's kind of what I did. I thought I'll apply for it. The worst thing that's going to happen is they'll say no. So had an interview, and was successful, and then offered the fellowship through there. So there was only 5 fellowships per year. So it's quite a small cohort-based program, which is really beneficial. And we've got lots of different healthcare backgrounds, like I said. So yeah, so that's
You've got a
kind of how
nice
I ended up.
network of five people that you're sort of you're treading the same path, but it's a different journey, isn't it? Because you've got your own PhDs.
Yes,
But
definitely.
how if that trusts somebody's permission, you know, who's why somebody let you do that? Because I think if you're working in research delivery and listening to this, you're thinking, I want to be Faye, people might be listening, thinking, you know, my manager would say, well, no, we're not supporting you. What's in it for us? You know, so why have you had, and I say that thinking, I don't mean that in you must have had permission or you have to have permission, but how did you get permission for that?
So I chose to be seconded from that role. So there was that sort of side of being seconded out of the role. But on a more personal level, I think it's just a case of being brave and saying, actually, I want to do this as part of my career and I want to progress into academia, and basically presenting it as that. So my PhD, which I'm sure we'll get into, is quite different to my clinical cardiovascular background. And I did sort of toy with the idea of doing a 0.2 whole time equivalent remaining with vascular research as a research nurse, but thought I'm probably cutting my nose off to spite my face, if you like, because I'm cutting the time off to do my PhD, which is for 3 years funded. So I kind of approached it and said, I've applied for this, can I be seconded? And then went on with it that way, really.
So I'm going to ask you a two-part question now, and I'll tell you both parts of the question because I've got a lot of experience of people doing these sorts of things. So you've done very well to get what is a PhD off the shelf in a very competitive environment. So you haven't written it, you haven't proposed it, but you've thought, I can live with that. That's something I could be interested in. I'm going to go for it. You've been the top candidate. You've got it. Got it. Tell us what you thought the PhD was, is my first question, and then tell us what the PhD is.
That's a great question. So what did I think it was? I looked at it as an opportunity to truly delve into academia and research. So pulling on all of those skills that I have clinically, and within research delivery. So I thought this is going to be an opportunity to learn all those skills, and really, where else would I get the opportunity to learn how to, I don't know, do a systematic review or analyze this data or the coding, things like that. So that's kind of what I imagined it to be, and that's how I saw it, and probably sold it to myself and to those that were asking, why on earth am I doing that? And what is it? I mean, it is that. I'm definitely learning a lot. I knew that I was going to be throwing myself into the deep end. I feel like I've probably dived off a cliff and I'm swimming across the channel at the moment, because it is a lot of hard work, but I'm absolutely loving it. And on those days where I think this is really, really hard, why am I doing this? I think actually look back and look at all of those skills that I'm gaining and the things that I didn't know or couldn't do at the beginning of my PhD that I'm getting close to doing, that's kind of what I'm going to benefit from. And me doing this PhD is opening up so many different avenues postdoctorally that wouldn't have been available otherwise. So I think I knew it was going to be a learning opportunity, and I do feel it is a learning opportunity. And I think it's been quite challenging almost, going from a position where you know what you're doing, you're in a senior position within your sort of clinical research delivery role, going into a different higher education institution. So Loughborough isn't attached to a hospital, for those that don't know. So going into a completely different environment and kind of becoming very junior and feeling like a fish out of water.
I knew what you're going to say. I've been there, done that.
Yeah.
Tell us the topic and tell us, you know, if you've got a thesis title or a research question, tell us what it is.
Yeah, of course. So, title is Work in Progress, but I'm looking at the influence of lifestyle and pharmacotherapy on hormonal and neural correlates of appetite in people living with overweight and obesity, which is a bit of a mouthful.
It is. And if we think about public health, it's a really good question, isn't it?
Yes, it's really, really interesting. So, as I mentioned, lots of topics to kind of choose from, and this is the one that stood out to me, despite it being very different to sort of cardiovascular care. So yeah, it's really interesting. It's kind of a bit of a double whammy in the sense that jumping up, going to be doing a PhD, but doing a PhD in an area I know very little about initially. So a lot of reading at the beginning, a hell of a lot, which I know there is anyway with a PhD. But then sort of learning the amount of skills that I've learned already. So I've started my third year of my PhD, got about 8 or 9 months left, but within the first 12 months, I was learning how to do VO2 max tests. I've been learning how to do ELISAs to analyze blood samples. A big learning curve has been basically looking at MRIs. So I'm looking at neural correlates of visual food cues. So that's an indirect way of looking at brain activity. So my previous experience was basically helping a patient get into an MRI, and then that's all I'd have to worry about. But now I'm having to look at the images afterwards and look at all the data. So
So a real
yes.
broad range of skills there that are clinical as well as academic. So it really is a clinical academic pathway, isn't it? Truly is. The two bind together. You're not doing two separate things and calling yourself a clinical academic. You are literally, you know, studying what you're doing clinically, which is a great pathway to be on. Is
Yes.
it have you had a sort of time where you've thought, am I doing the right thing? Have you had a crossroads moment? Have you had a blip? Or has it run smoothly into year three?
There's definitely been times where I've sat there and thought, oh my goodness, why am I doing this? Like, why have I got here? Who do I think I am? But there's never been a time where I've thought I can't do this. Like I know I'm going to do it because it's what I'm passionate about, and it's what drives you. Yeah, it's been. I think the main challenges have been just the amount of things that have been completely new to me. So, like I mentioned, doing these sort of really specific sports exercise medicine tests that I'd heard of, but I'd never been involved in. And it's such a privilege to be doing it at Loughborough University as well. I mean, it's the number one university for sports related studies in the world, which is it's fantastic. So yeah, just the challenges of learning a lot, been sort of baptism of fire, if you like. And also because, as I mentioned earlier, I haven't done a full master's, so it's been sort of that jump of getting back into writing, and it sounds silly, but getting back into reading and reading different to if you would, I don't know, just on the ward and you found something interesting, you thought, oh, I'll just read this article. You're actually having to delve into it a lot deeper, which maybe I didn't appreciate at the beginning. I thought, oh, it's all right, I know how to read, it'll be fine. But yeah, it's just sort of that heightened level. But it's great. I absolutely love it. So
And
yeah, so
you do a PhD, and either the methodology or the subject matter or both are sort of meant to line you up for a postdoctoral career, aren't they? You're either develop it's a research training, you know, and
yeah.
hopefully it's a research training that gives you a methodology that you really want to take further forward and become a true expert in with experience. And you can then, in our background, you can have your discipline as well that you really want to get to a higher level at. What's this taking you to? What's your plan? I mean, congratulations on getting any form of Wellcome Trust, because they're not fellowship, they're not easy to
No,
get.
thank you.
It's nice to be to have a cohort of people that you can probably work with rather than sort of compete with, because they're all doing different things and it's your own journey. But where's it leading you to? Because in year three now, the difficulty of the market is you've got to have something to drop onto. You've either got to overlap a postdoctoral application with the end of with the submission of a viva and of a thesis and a viva. There's very little in the way of bridging funds to what there used to be. So you almost have to start thinking about year four, which should be postdoc, in year three. Is that how you've been made to feel? Is that what you're thinking about now?
Yeah, definitely. So I think that is the it's something that maybe to listeners who are considering a PhD, it's maybe something that you don't really think about before starting a PhD. But yes, definitely, it's something that is constantly on your mind. And I think personally, I was thinking about it in years one and two of my PhD, and I know a lot of my colleagues in the same cohort as I were doing the same. So ideally, I would like to go on to do a postdoctoral fellowship. I know my interests are sort of cardiovascular disease, but now I've got that element of lifestyle and sort of health and things like that. So if I could combine a sort of cardiovascular risk management approach, so that's what I'd like to do. So the Wellcome Trust LHIP funding is until the end of September. So I have about 8 months left, and I would like to submit by then. So now I've officially said it. Here we go. So I think what I'll end up doing is submitting and then being that sort of area of viva and corrections and things like that. Ideally, whilst starting a postdoctoral role. But I feel there's been times where I've really worried and thought, oh gosh, what have I done? This is my clinical background, I'm doing a PhD in this area. How am I going to combine this? And how am I going to create that career path for myself, which doesn't exist? But I've flipped that around and thought, I've got my fingers in so many pies now that I've got a whole toolbox of skills and knowledge and an interest that I'm in a really beneficial position. Yeah, I'd like experience of sort of a bit of grant writing and things like that in the future, but this is obviously quite a few years away. So,
It's
but yes.
good to hear, because that's the pathway of anybody else in any other discipline really that does a PhD. But when I sort of really started to get engaged with research probably 15, 16 years ago, the nurses I knew that got a PhD had sort of like ended their research career with the PhD. They'd sort of sailed into academia and were educators with the title doctor, or they were doing little bits of research around research delivery in, clinical settings and things like that. And it felt like almost the pinnacle of your career. And we've had to work away as a discipline to recognize that it's a research training. It makes you a professional researcher. And so the next stage is it's the start of a career, isn't it? That will put you on a higher plane. It will give you a better trajectory, and it will give you a whole different sort of future than you thought academically and clinically. So it's nice to hear that we are now developing that model, and people quite know how it is. And you'll have to get used to rejection. You'll have to learn that
Oh,
you're going to get one in 10 postdoctoral grants. And trust me, it won't be down to the quality of your submission. It will be down to the amount of money that the fund has got, and it's that sort of thing. So it's a very you have to you'll have to develop a thick skin. And I say that to all of my PhD students that finish and do really well. So you're going to need a thick skin now, because it's largely rejection, and it's not rejection necessarily of your idea or your ability. It's you didn't make the cut, despite the
Yeah,
fact it's fundable
absolutely.
or it was good, but you never get that in the feedback. Which is
Yeah.
what I pride myself. If I give anybody any feedback, then I generally say it was good enough, but it didn't make, if we had to cut it to five, it didn't make the top five. And then I think it makes people feel a little bit better. But anyway, let's talk about lack of success. It's about success, isn't it? And we want you to do well with the PhD, and we want you to do well, postdoctorally, and hear about these sorts of careers, because I'm hoping when people listening to this podcast will think, oh, I wonder what she's gone on to do, and they'll have a look for your papers. And equally, you're hoping that people with similar backgrounds will think, I wonder if there's an opportunity for me like that. So I suppose my last question to you is advice, tips, whether they are positive, negative, whether they're things to do or things to avoid, what would you be saying to any nurse or any AHP that was in your position 3 or 4 years ago, thinking I could probably step into research?
So I would probably advise people to just get involved in anything that you find interesting. Don't sort of put a limit on yourself. So if you think, oh, why is that person doing that? Just go and ask them and build your network as best as you can. And don't assume that a professor isn't going to want to talk to you and support you, because it'll be probably be quite the opposite. Within sort of my time doing my PhD, I feel that my network has increased significantly, and it's from not just from a sort of nursing cohort, but even further afield. And don't be scared to stay within your speciality, your clinical speciality, because I think as nurses we do tend to hold on to that a little bit. But I have clinical academic mentors who are from completely different institutions, different clinical areas, and the advice that they give me is it's just completely fantastic. It's invaluable. So go to that conference or send that email, and just be curious, and put yourself out there a little bit, see what's available. A lot of sort of senior clinical academics have said to me, you're in such a good position now, Faye, because there's so many opportunities available to nurses, midwives, AHPs. Just embrace it and go for it, and just and be brave. There is never a right time to do a PhD, because we've all got busy lives and we don't want to let go of that thing that we know is safe and secure. But yeah, just be brave and just go and do it.
What a great end. I reckon I've probably got the quote there. Just be brave, go and do it. I think I'm going to write that down the minute we finish the episode. I think I've probably got the quote. And what I normally do is I have a listen back before I discuss your episode with Eleanor, and I'll say to Eleanor off record, do you reckon you called the episode this? I think that was the quote. And well, sometimes we've both picked up a quote that we're going to say, but I think the just be brave might be there. You might look out for that title particularly. Faye, that's a lovely episode, and lovely to hear from you. And I think it's really encouraging for anybody listening thinking about doing a PhD themselves in whatever discipline they are. So I'll say, Faye Ashton, good luck. We'll follow up over the next few months because I'd love to be able to be on a summary or be able to say I've heard from Faye and it's all gone well and she's doing this. So we will follow up, but I'm going to say Faye Ashton, thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, Andrew. I've really enjoyed it.
Thank you. Bye bye.
Bye.
Welcome back to the Nurse Researcher Podcast after a lovely episode with Faye Ashton, but I have to say, welcome back to Eleanor for our summary.
Thanks, Andrew.
And
Thanks for having me
Faye's
back.
first question to me, Eleanor, when I interviewed her was, how did Eleanor go on? So I don't know, there may be hundreds of listeners out there desperate to hear how you went on. Give us your story.
Yeah, of course, that's where we left off. Yes, I passed my viva with minor corrections, so I was really pleased about that. It was probably 2.5 hours in total. I had two great examiners, put me at ease throughout. It was very thorough, and there was some great discussion, and yeah, I was lucky at the end that I was given the minor corrections outcome, so really pleased with that.
Marvelous. Congratulations. I
Yeah.
want to do the big fanfare. I don't have sound effects, to do the sort of party popper and those sorts of things. And of course, I know the outcome, so I can't pretend that I don't. But, on behalf of people listening, I think, congratulations and well done.
Thank you.
I'm
Thanks very
sure
much, Andrew.
as much as people are as pr incredibly proud of you, I'm sure you're very proud of yourself, or at least you should be.
Yes, I enjoyed celebrating. It was a really nice feeling. And I don't think it really sinks in actually for a little while. It takes a bit of time, because it's such intense work, isn't it, for such a number of years. And then suddenly you do the viva and like a few hours, it's like, oh, wow, is that it?
Yeah.
It's quite a strange feeling actually. But
Submitting it,
good one.
submitting your thesis is like handing over your baby sometimes.
Yeah.
And then now you're at the, you're a little bit sort of, you're successful and you're delighted, and it's a few days of well done and congratulations from people. And then it's a little bit like something's been chipped off your shoulder. You don't quite know what to do you? It's
No. It felt quite strange, because I submitted my thesis online. So it is one click of a button and you're kind of hovering over it thinking, oh my gosh, this is it. And that's it. Off it goes,
makes me
just like
sound
that.
old. Makes me sound old to say I have to post three copies away.
Oh
So
gosh.
yeah, and that, what was that? That was only 2013 or something like that.
Wow.
So it, I'm glad it is a slightly better process. But
Yeah.
it's a no better feeling. I remember walking back from the university post office and people saying congratulations, and I was thinking, oh my God, I can't change anything now. But it's a
Yeah.
wonderful feeling, it's a wonderful achievement, and what we're trying to push in this series is that this is the start of a different career trajectory for you and everybody else that's
Yeah.
drawing to a close a PhD or somewhat through a PhD and looking to build a new career. It's the start of something, and
Yeah.
to say a brighter future suggests that being a clinician alone isn't a bright future, but it's not a brighter future, but it's a very different future, and in
Yeah,
some
you.
ways you make a difference in a different way.
Absolutely. You've gained this whole new skill set, and so much new knowledge as well. In addition to, the years of training and experience you've had. So it's kind of figuring out next and how to sort of make all that work, really.
And I don't, does it have to go through your awards board, or are you started to call yourself Dr. Eleanor Hovard now?
Yes, no, it does have to go. Yeah, it does have to go through the awards board at the university. Yeah.
Wow.
So just wait for that official,
Well, I've said it now.
presumably
It's
letter or
there. It's
email.
out there. It's out there now.
Thank you.
Don't
Thanks,
let them let
Andrew.
us down. And that, so Faye, now listening back to her summary, will be at ease now knowing that Eleanor's Dr. Eleanor Hovard, and we're all delighted for you. And Faye was probably we always have a little pre-chat before we do this summary, but I think we could both empathize but also relate to a lot of what Faye said. And it was just a lovely episode, wasn't it? She was very, she spoke very well about the pathway she's taken and about what she hopes to do.
Yeah, very, very much so. Very honest, and really thoughtful, I thought, in the way she described her journey. And we spoke, we had a chat about, how the thread throughout her interview felt like it was around that bravery, and a bit of uncertainty as well as to, not knowing if you feel ready to undertake a PhD. But actually, there is probably not a time when you feel completely ready. It's like one of those things in life where it's like, okay, well, you either do it now or don't do it, And then also, she spoke about that permission, which I thought was quite interesting. I think a lot of us feel, maybe especially as nurses and midwives, about gaining permission to actually be able to develop your career and do a PhD. I always find that really interesting. That, that many people feel like that. And Faye, I think, said she even had to sell it to herself, but took ownership of her career and, had the skills and the leadership ability to be able to influence whoever it was that she needed to speak to say, well, this is what I want to do. This is how I'd like my career to move forwards. And, was able to do a secondment. But I always find that sort of concept of permission really interesting and, in our field.
I aren't as experienced as you. I did probably 6 months of research delivery when I was called a research nurse, and that was probably something like 2004. It's a long time ago when I did that role, but it felt like you needed permission to step out of, it felt like you're very much in your lane as a research nurse. And I'm talking 20 years ago now. And I've said this so many times, it felt capped and it felt like there was a very low ceiling for what you were allowed to achieve. And probably the better you were at it. So if you're a better research nurse and you really delivered well on a study for somebody, the less likely they were to want you to go. And so that's why I always feel like I want to say to people, you clearly were doing really well at research delivery. It's wonderful that somebody's almost said, we'd want to support you. And I think that's where I think about leaders. Somebody's seen her potential and thought, well, why should we restrict her to this? If she want, you can do wonderful things now in research delivery, your own PI program, and really be a true leader in research delivery. But other people want to go off and be independent and do different things. And the PhD is probably the route for them. And the fact that we've got leaders now saying, how can we help you? is wonderful because I didn't see that 10, 15 years ago. And even 5 years ago, it was harder.
Yeah, it's another career opportunity now, isn't it? And I, especially in clinical research nursing as well, you know, you've developed a whole host of really important research skills that other nurses and midwives might not necessarily be able to develop, and that's really helpful, I think, if you do decide that you want to go on to do a PhD. But I guess also there is that real desire that you need to also want to do a PhD. I mean, people can offer you the opportunity, and that's part of it, knowing about the opportunities, isn't it? But also you do need that inner motivation, because it is such a sacrifice. But there's a lot to be said, I think, you know, for informed consent skills, interviewing, research governance. There's so much that you can, you know, sort of draw from, which Faye pointed out in her interview. And you know, and then it's, you know, how do you apply that then to your PhD? I think you're kind of a few steps ahead, actually, to be honest, when you've got that knowledge behind you.
You've had a wonderful practical training, and you did the same, and you've actually just quoted yourself actually, because you just said you've got to really want to do a PhD, which I think was the title of your that was the title of your episode. So you're good for that quote. But I think what it gives you is a practical training and an underpinning understanding of the research process that other people that might fly straight into academia or move from a senior clinical role into something like a pre-doc or a PhD, they don't quite understand the depth, the scrutiny of ev and everything that goes with research. And I think the research delivery role really gets you ready for a PhD. You know, if you don't,
It
you can do that
does,
and not
yeah.
want to be any more academic than you already are. You can just think, well, I'm happy here. And that's the majority of people. And but if you do want to step out of it, I think the doors are open now. And I think this is a good opportunity to say, you know, if you have a desire to do research for yourself in the future, don't think that research delivery isn't the right role for you, because it probably is. It's probably the step up that you need. You haven't got to go straight into a master's degree or just climb the academic ladder. If you wanted to go into research delivery, there are now wonderful opportunities, and I wouldn't have said that to people a few years ago.
Yeah, and also it does make me think, though, if nurses and midwives and allied health professionals had those opportunities to be able to be involved more in clinical trials, you know, in their other roles, then they would also be exposed to the processes that are involved. And it is still fairly siloed, I think, at times. So, you know, in terms of capability and giving other people those opportunities, there's a way to go, I think, in terms of allowing people to be given those opportunities to work with role models or individuals that are in research delivery, you know, when you think about student placements and things, because otherwise they don't see that, do they? And learn from that.
So, like you, she's sort of come through that stage of the career as well. She had a good role in research delivery, like you did, you know, and it's been a great platform for her, as it has been for you, you know. And I'm hoping time will show exactly the same for her, that she'll be successful and will move on from a similar background.
What really resonated with me, I think, was when Faye mentioned that she was, it was like jumping off the deep end, and she was swimming through the channel. And I thought that really resonated with me. You know, at times things feel really hard and quite tough, but you know, you've got that vision of where you want to get to. But also, when you do look back, I think, especially when you're doing your PhD, and look at maybe that very first, those first few months where you're kind of like just trying to get your head around what you're supposed to do, it might feel a little bit overwhelming. You look back and you see the progress that you've made, and you know, that's when you realize actually, okay, I'm doing okay. And of course, your supervisors are there as well to encourage you and to make sure that you do keep swimming and make it to the other end. But I remember that feeling well as well. So that really resonated for me.
I thought that, and I think a theme that came through for me, I'm talking like a qualitative researcher there, a theme that came through, a theme that emerged for me, Alan, it was probably bravery a little bit. I think she'd been brave to take the leap, you know, as you've just suggested. I think there was some bravery in, you know, she alluded to going to a university that doesn't have sort of hospital status. It doesn't have university status with a hospital. So, you know, so she's had to go it alone a little bit. But I think with that comes the fact that she's developing a new practical set as well. She's got a Wellcome Trust PhD, which is not easy by any way, shape, or means.
Incredible.
But equally, you know, she's having to learn new practical skills as she does that. And most people we talk to haven't talked really about a clinical academic PhD. They've talked about a PhD. And she truly is doing the clinical role within it, isn't she?
Yeah, and that's where that bravery is really important, isn't it? Because it's when you haven't been exposed to things, or you've got to learn new things that you know not you might not know anything about them. And so, kind of sitting with that, where you've been comfortable perhaps for a while with your clinical skills and your level of knowledge, and then being reintroduced to that zone of, oh my goodness, I don't know anything about how to code, or you know whatever it is you're learning, and just being willing to think, okay, well I can do this. And almost like you have to do, I felt like you have to give yourself a lot of self-talk to almost get through it in some ways. But the bravery is really important, I think, throughout the PhD, because you're doing so much navigating. And at the end as well, I think she also spoke about, you know, coming to that crossroads. She's got about 8 or 9 months left in her PhD. You know, kind of where do you go next? And how do you do that? It feels slightly risky, I think. And there probably are risks throughout your PhD. You know, in terms of which direction you want to travel, and you're always trying to think ahead of what you want to do, and it's not necessarily easy when the path isn't carved for you. You're carving your own path, aren't you?
And there's I took it for granted, really, at the end of my PhD, which, again, the end of my PhD is about 11 or 12 years ago now, the university I was working for doing the PhD would just cover me until I got a postdoc award. You know, they just pay my salary, and it was pretty, if they were going to keep you, they did. And but you were then going for grants, and you almost paid back by, you know, getting a grant with on costs and things like that. But now, the financial situation is so dire for everybody that you've got to have that overlap. And I was conscious of wanting it to feel that that's there. That's everybody's got that now. It's almost saying, I know you've not finished your PhD, but apply for your prof doc. And it's a mixed message, really, because you're trying to give everything towards the end and get everything right to submit. But equally, you're then trying to write yourself your next grant before you've finished writing your thesis. And it's a horrible position to be in, but that's becoming, dare I say, normality to some extent.
Yeah, it's tricky. It is tricky, and you're also wanting to keep the momentum going, so trying to maintain that isn't easy. And I think, you know, it's almost like you're in a position where you're not necessarily looking for the perfect fit. You've got to just find something that works, but also be willing to think, well, okay, well, if this direction isn't quite the way I want it to go, then I, you know, might have to swim a slightly different direction, because it's kind of uncertain, isn't it? It's not like having a clinical career where you know that the next progression, say you're a band five, it's a band six up. It's not so clear cut as that, I don't think, in academia.
No, it's difficult. I mean, fellowships are your first thought. Postdoc fellowships are, there seem to be more of them. You're more likely to get a fellowship postdoc than you are a big grant because you've not held anything postdoc yet. And fellowship always seems like the first step. But the other opportunity is to be a research associate on a big grant for somebody else and do a key component of the work or a work package of your own. There are different ways you can grow in your early postdoc career. And we'll probably speak to a few people on this series that are now probably just finished and to see where they are.
And I suppose that's it. It's just different. There's lots of different ways you can do things, aren't there? So that's
You don't want to be
an
negative.
opportunity, really.
Yeah,
Yeah, there's an
you don't want to be
opportunity.
negative, but there's lots of certainty whilst you're in your PhD. The certainty is that as long as you're doing what you're meant to do, you're going to be getting to the end of this PhD. Once you're at the end of it, the certainty has elapsed then, isn't it? And it's a little bit of, right, okay, now what?
Got to figure things out. That's right.
That's why people have to stop prepping towards the end. It's a shame, but there is an overlap now.
You have to think ahead a bit, don't you? But you know, you've got this whole amazing new skill set and knowledge and experience and gained in confidence, probably. I would think most people, I mean, I certainly did, gave me a lot more confidence. You got lots of opportunities, hopefully to be able to present and to network. So make the most of that.
And you've never been in a better position to summarize a series than this one because you're living, you know, what these people are just approaching, aren't you? You're in that early postdoc period now, and you're finding your way, and you find yourself not just at a crossroads, but at a roundabout sometimes, and thinking which exit.
That's right. And I suppose in some ways there are so many different ways you can go. And that's what can make it a little bit more challenging, because it's not such a straight road. And it's just kind of thinking of the choices that you have, which is a good position to be in, I think, isn't it?
Absolutely. So I think we have a quote. We've agreed that the quote that Faye said really did just give me a sense of the whole sort of episode. And she said, just be brave, go and do it. And I think that's our quote. And
Perfect. Love
she's
that.
certainly brave, and she's, you know, she's a real advocate for what she's doing, and I think will become a real role model for people. So well done, Faye. We wish you well.
Yeah,
And
absolutely.
I've, like all people in this series, I've said to her she's got to keep us up to date with her progress.
Yes, can't wait to
Let me
hear.
know how she's doing. So that'll do, Eleanor. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thanks
Well
so
done to
much,
you
Andrew.
again.
Thank you very
And
much.
I won't bring it up again. I won't bring it up
Thanks
again. I
very
can
much.
keep going through it with you. But well done. Thank you for your time. And that brings us to a close. Thank you.
Thank you.